Each month on the Restoration Home podcast, we are focusing on a different spiritual discipline, and these are all based on my new book, Habits for a Sacred Home. This book is about 9 practices from history that can anchor and restore modern families, and we'd love to help you do this with intentional questions, featuring amazing women of faith, and even an extra book list at the end so you can continue your learning about these habits of life that can bring more peace and connection to your family. So grab your copy at habitsforasacredhome.com. We'll link this in the show notes so you can get started on building a rule of life for your family today. This is Jennifer Pepito with the Restoration Home Podcast. This is the show where we talk about the peaceful path to connected families and restored communities. Today on the show, I'm excited to be chatting with Lindsay Minaj. She's on Instagram at Treehouse Schoolhouse, and she's a creator of the beautiful, inspiring Treehouse Schoolhouse Nature Studies. Thanks so much for joining me today, Lindsay.
Hi, Jen. So happy to be here.
It's so much fun to get to chat with you. We've been friends for a few years now, and I am excited to talk to you about this topic of stewardship, because you are one of those mamas who is stewarding a wide range of things right now. I was in the bathroom this morning, blow drying my hair, brushing my teeth, and doing body weight squats at the same exact time. And so I know you could relate to this like sense of being a little bit under pressure, having quite a lot on your plate, and really wanting to be very present with your children. And I think this conversation is going to encourage mamas. But you know what are some of the things, like, I know right now you guys are building a house, you have a business, you're homeschooling your kids. How do you steward the hearts of your children in the midst of such a busy season?
You know, I think that God calls us as women to lots of different things. And lately, my conversation with God is like, Lord, I really just want a simple, slow life. And sometimes I think there are seasons where we're not necessarily called to slow, or we're not necessarily called to even simple, that sometimes God gives us more things than we think we can carry in seasons. And so anyway, my conversation with the Lord lately has been, how can I steward all of these things well and still have a sense of peace? Because I do believe the Lord can give us peace. And I think with my children, it's really important that all of the things that I'm called to, all of the things that we're carrying when we're building a house, when I'm, you know, stewarding this business, the Lord has just really made it clear that I just need to bring them alongside. And so rather than having a separate space for them to go so that I can do my work, it's been really, really cool to just watch them come alongside and to see them learn, really doing a lot of life school in busy seasons, where they're getting a front row seat to business ownership, to just the logistics of running a household, and my husband building this house and us both being entrepreneurs. So even in busy seasons, you know, connecting with our kids' hearts just looks like having a lot of time to be together, even when you are carrying a lot of things.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me actually of my conversation with Mary Heffernan from Five Mary's Farms, because they also run a few businesses and are pretty pressed, but they just really incorporate their kids into it. And it also reminds me of the podcast that Jenny Yurich did with the, I think it's Micheline. I can't remember her name, but she wrote a book called like Hunt, Gather, Parent. And that's the podcast title, about how Indigenous people around the world, they have their kids helping out a lot with the work of the family. And it gives their children such a sense of purpose. And I love that you kind of have that vision too, to incorporate your children and give them that sense of purpose and being a part of something as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, when we were missionaries in Mexico, that was a big part of what we did to help our children love what we were doing, is just kind of talk to them about what an impact it was making, and not, we didn't downgrade how important the work we were doing was to our children. But the other thing that I'm realizing more and more that we need is community. You know, for our children, they need to be with people. They need to have people to process with. And we need to have people to process with. But when you're running a business and a home and homeschooling, it can almost be a little bit isolating. What are some of the things that you've done to cultivate strong community relationships?
You know, I feel like this is an area that we're pretty strong in our family. And I'm really, really grateful. We have kind of this crossover of our church community and my Wild and Free group. I started this group about 5 years ago, and it was just when I just had preschoolers, and it was just kind of a play date group once a week with some friends that I knew were kind of had an intent to homeschool. And it's grown into just this incredible community that does require work as a leader to, you know, protect it and just preserve the beauty of it and the wonder of it. And there is sometimes like things you have to deal with as a leader of a group, you know, but for me, it's been worth it because there wasn't what we needed. And so I had to create it. And that's my encouragement to moms is that if you don't have the community that you need or that you desire for your family, to make a plan to take one step towards it. Whether that be, you know, just inviting that one family over for dinner on a more regular basis. So for us, we have our weekly group with our Wild and Free group. And then some of those friends also attend our church. And then because we are just so close knit with them, those are the friends we go on vacation with. Those are the friends we have over for dinner. Those are the friends that, you know, swing by when we're sick and bring us soup. And so we really have created this beautiful community. And I feel like my children are just given so much more than if they were brought to a school where I don't know the parents, I don't know the children. And then each school year, they're being separated from those friends that they built community with in that 1 year.
Ooh, I love the way that you kind of brought that around, because I think sometimes people do feel like, oh, if I want my kids to have community, they have to be in school. But the reality is you can build a really strong community as a homeschool family, especially if you create some kind of consistency. Like, you know, we also have started co-ops in our community, because those I feel like really produce such real relationships. Because it's one thing to invite someone over for dinner when you can prepare really perfectly and have everything just right. But when you're doing a co-op together, when you have to show up with your kids and a project prepared, or when you have to show up with your kids in the dirty, muddy outdoors where someone's going to have a meltdown, then you really get to love and know each other, because community is built on experiences, and some of them adverse experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And our group is made up of about 30 families. And so within 30 families who already have similar values, because they're valuing preserving childhood and being outdoors and things, within those 30 families, you're going to find a handful of families that really click with your children, that you really love the mom. And then even, you know, we've brought in the dads quite a bit. So then we see like the dads going on a hike together. And it's like, of these 30 families, we're for sure going to find a few that become truly like family to us. And because they're long-term relationships, and it's year after year of meeting every Friday, like you said, you know, encouraging one another through discipline, or picking up this kid because they're, you know, they're sick and the other children are sick and they still want to go to the meetup. You really get to know people. And I started this group, but I'm not best friends with all of the moms, but I see the beautiful connections that the other moms are making, even that some are having Thanksgiving together. And I'm just like, oh, it's such an honor to be the one that was able to like help cultivate some of that community. Because as a homeschooling parent, you are not only taking on your children's education, but you're really making a choice to also steward their community and their relationships. And that's a big job, but it's such a beautiful honor.
Yeah, it's beautiful. One of the things that can create kind of crises even in community is when we don't have shared values. You know, for instance, like we don't do Pokemon kind of things. And so if we were in a community group and some other kids were trying to get my kids to participate in something like that, there would have to be this internal struggle of, okay, well, we want to live and let live in a sense, but we also don't want our children to be drawn into something that isn't with our values. How do you handle things like that with that many people, with that many diverse ideas and opinions about life and all of its all of its different aspects?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly people who carry, you know, we all have a lot of the same values, but it's like a big Venn diagram, because there's also families that have other values. They read other types of books or watch different sorts of things. But I feel like because I'm there and because I'm able to be, you know, watching what's going on and I'm able to shepherd my children in those situations, it's like, you don't want to completely isolate your child with only the exact same kinds of families as you forever. It's an opportunity for us to rub shoulders with some people who may see the world slightly differently, have different values, but I'm able to walk with my children in how to handle those situations. So even saying, that's a book that their family thinks, you know, is appropriate for them to read. In our family, we don't believe that that's a book that's appropriate for you to read. So this is how I feel like you should respond if you're asked something about that book. And so giving them opportunities to have real life experiences so that they're not just thrown into the world without you there. So as they grow, you know, being able to be with them during those situations.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a good way to, you know, communicate our values while still having relationships, because we have to be able to have community and steward those connected relationships for our children. And that's what creates kind of the restorative communities that we're talking about in this podcast, is when people are willing to stick it out in relationships and really, you know, do the hard work sometimes, even of conflict. Have you ever had to actually confront, you know, like we had in our larger community, there was a mom who felt like her child was being bullied by another mom's kids. Have you ever had to confront an issue like that?
Yes, we have. After leading the group for about 4 years, we kind of put together a community commitment sort of contract. And at the beginning of this year, we got together with a mom's brunch and we went over this whole contract, me and a couple of other moms that have stepped into leadership, and kind of talked about the values of our group and what we want this group to stand for and be about. And just so that we had like a plumb line, so that if situations came up, we could point back to it. Just for example, we haven't had any issues yet with like cell phones, but we just said the children should not have any phones out for taking pictures for anything in our group. We are not doing any screens during our group. Just an example, if they would like to take pictures, then they can get a digital camera or whatever. That's just an example. But just because we hadn't had that issue yet, I was like, it's better to, you know, have some standards beforehand so that if something comes up, we can point back to something. When conflict has come up, we have stated in our community kind of commitment that we really want moms to handle it between them. You know, we're all adults. We love each other. We want to be like a family where if your sister does something to offend you, you can go to her and you can talk it out between the parents. The leaders do not need to get involved. If that doesn't work, then we can have like a sit down and sort of an intervention and kind of help mediate a situation. With any group that's that many people that are committed weekly for that many years, you are going to have some conflict. So we have, but I just feel like it's worth it. You know, community is not always, you know, feel good. Sometimes, like you said, community is conflict. And the important thing is to be mature adults and to like love each other through it and say like, I'm still here. I'm not running and hiding just because there's conflict. And so thankfully we've had conflict, but we've made it out on the other side.
I love that. That's such a beautiful testimony, because that is how you build a nation, really. You know, what we have right now kind of is a total breakdown where people can't talk about things. And so they just resort to protesting or violence. Whereas we could, I mean, sit down and just like listen to each other. I heard a guy named Canon Andrew White speak, and he was really influential in coordinating hostage retrieval in the Middle East. And one of the things he said struck me so deeply. He said, you have to listen to your enemies in order to make peace. And I think, you know, that stewarding relationships requires being able to understand where people are coming from. But also, you know, a big part of this podcast is elevating the idea of having a family rule of life, just like the Benedictines had. And so having even, yeah, a community rule of life, if you are stewarding a community of homeschoolers, having some kind of a written code of ethics or written code, just like there was a code of ethics for the Knights of the Round Table, and there was a code of ethics for the Benedictines, and many denominations have some kind of a code of what they believe. I think that's a really smart idea for community to have kind of a written code of like, here's the things that we have shared values on and we're going to uphold as a community. So you're doing all of this. I didn't know that you were also leading this big group, your big Walden Free group, but how do you navigate stewarding your own emotional health. Because as moms, so many of the things that come up with our children bring up our own insecurities or inadequacies. Like I can remember, you know, being in the grocery store, thank God for Instacart and Walmart delivery or Target delivery. But I can remember being in the grocery store with two of my children and them having like a major temper tantrum. And at this point, I wasn't so full of shame. I had worked through some of that. But still, you know, there's a sense of embarrassment that comes up when your kids have a meltdown, or when you go to co-op and your kids refuse to do their recitation, or they all of a sudden, you know, refuse to do their little show and tell or their talent show, or, you know, the piano recitals, and they all of a sudden forget everything. And all of these kinds of experiences bring up a sense of unrest in us as moms. And that unrest is often tied to lies from childhood, like people aren't going to like me if I can't perform, or I'm not going to be loved if I don't bring my best self to the table. And so then our children kind of bring up these lies we've believed. How do you steward your emotional health in this busy life?
I think it's really important as busy moms to, you know, carve out time to really get like to listen to your own emotion. And this past year, I've really been on a journey. I'm like a move person. I can easily kind of push things under the rug. If I have an emotion that I don't like, I can just kind of put it under the rug and it'll go away. And over the last year, the Lord's been really challenging me to move a little slower in my own heart and in my own thoughts, and to recognize that the emotions that I feel, they, number one, they're not bad no matter what they are, because kind of being raised in certain denominations or certain ways of life, just sort of without someone actually saying it, I kind of believed that, you know, negative emotions are bad and positive emotions are good. And so if you have a negative emotion, you don't express it. And over the last year, the Lord's been really working and really just teaching me that every emotion is, you know, I'm part of my whole body, my whole makeup is spirit, soul, emotion, mind, and all of that I've given to the Lord as a believer. And that when I have an emotion, it can point me back to Him, and it can show me something that He wants to heal, or He wants to speak into, or He wants to use. And so I've just really prioritized time alone in the mornings. It's something that I feel like I can't survive without some peace in the mornings before my children wake up. Just sitting with the emotions of even the day before. What came up? Was it jealousy? Was it insecurity? When this person said this, why did I have an uncomfortable feeling? And really just journaling those things out, and then having a few people in my life that I can process those things with. So just as important it is for our children to have community, it is important for us as moms to have like-minded moms or women in our life that we can process with, and they can pray for us, and we can really chase after emotional health together and show up broken, you know, show up needing answers, and also show up being able to support them. So I have a few very close friends and my sister who lives near that I'm constantly saying, hey, can you get together for a quick hike? An hour walk, so I can like process this with you, and just making space for your own emotional, spiritual journey. Because if we don't do that, then what are we going to have to even hand to our children? What are we going to be able to pass off if we're drowning?
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I really recognize now. I wish I'd known it earlier, that if I'm feeling something, it's better to kind of try to dig down and see what's underneath that,
right,
instead of just pushing it away. Because often I would sort of believe, like, I think we need to experience every emotion, but we don't have to believe every emotion, because often emotions are liars. And so learning how to like take every thought captive. And I don't think that means just like pushing it away and putting a smile on. I think it more means taking that thought and understanding, where is this coming from? And inviting Jesus, like, help me understand why I'm feeling this. Where did this feeling even start to bother me as a child? And then being able to get more healing so that we can respond and stay connected. Because I think some of my biggest mistakes as a mother really were prioritizing things like the aesthetics of my house or the behavior of my children over us really being connected and really knowing them. Because I feel like so many of the things that we think are behavior issues often are just a lack of connection. You know, our children start, you know, fighting with their siblings often because they just want some more attention from us. Or our children start, you know, lying often because they're scared of telling us the truth because they're scared of our reactions. So I think that staying connected is so important, but we can't do it if we're not actually connected to ourselves.
Absolutely.
And then one of the other things that I've wondered about, you know, both of our companies, the Peaceful Press and Treehouse Schoolhouse, have a real emphasis on connection, on just how important it is to build really strong connections with our children. Can you explain why that matters developmentally and spiritually?
Oh, goodness. Well, it's just like what we said. You know, I feel like everything starts with their heart. If you're trying to pound math facts or anything into your child from an educational standpoint, but they're not enjoying it. They're not feeling connected to you. They're not even connecting with what you're teaching. I feel like that's why we do so much with story, and we do so much with, you know, projects that bring that family relationship connection. And that's all at the center. You know, both of our curriculums, all of the things that we create are developed with the first priority being connection. And then everything else falls into place after that. And I just believe that if our kids are connected to us as their teachers, connected to the material that we're spreading the feast for them, it's going to be long lasting because there's a heart there. It's not just a mind connection, it's a heart connection. And so they're going to fall in love with the books. They're going to fall in love with the beauty and the delight, and the experiences. And it's going to make lasting impact into their heart and memories, which you can't shake, you know?
Exactly. I love you express that so well, because I'm constantly trying to communicate that to people, because, you know, moms worry, will my child fall behind if we focus on literature instead of focusing on workbooks? Or they worry, will my child be able to get into college? And of course they will get into college. Of course they can do whatever they want to do. But what's different is that they'll remember it, and their heart and their mind will be shaped, and they'll be emotionally well adapted, and they'll be happier, and they will be less afraid. And in which case, they'll be more able to learn and experiment and be creative. And so it's such a deeper, more impactful way of learning. But sometimes explaining it can be difficult because it seems like we're deprioritizing academics, but that's not true. We're just prioritizing things that will actually sink in, as opposed to just a shallow read and repeat or read and memorize kind of learning.
Absolutely. And as someone who was, you know, educated in the public school system, I feel like it took me a couple of years to realize that it's actually not about what the actual content, like the content of the history or the content of what you're learning, is a vehicle to them learning to fall in love with learning. It's a vehicle to learning how to learn. You know, it's a vehicle to learn somehow what it feels like to be sparked with excitement about learning something. And will they remember some of the facts, and will they remember some of the people and the times? They might, sure. But like in general, what you're trying to give your children before they are finished with their home education is a more of a feeling of, I love to learn. I know how to learn. When I want to succeed in something, I'm excited and I know what that feels like. So they're going to do it again, even if you've never, you know, covered what they plan to go into in their career. They know the feeling and they know how to get to the end result of succeeding in that.
Yeah, so good. And in addition, both of us choose books that produce a hopeful worldview, because I, you know, one of my children is doing a public school English class. It's a public school English class. And the literature is so depressing. Like it's a high school class. Every single story is the dark side of life. And I think that's very common, sadly, in public schools, is to give all these really sad, depressing stories, because they're, you know, partly they're trying to develop compassion, but what they're actually developing is hopelessness, because these stories don't necessarily have happy endings where people overcame. And on the converse, we're giving stories that, yes, have diverse characters and, yes, show other people from other lands, but also show a more hopeful worldview that people like books like The Single Shard, where, or, you know, some of the books that you have in your resources where people have trials, but they overcome.
Yes.
And that's what's so hopeful about life with the Lord, is that there's always hope. He's with us and he promises to be our shield and our buckler and our refuge.
Absolutely. I love that point.
Well, thanks so much for joining today, Lindsay. We'll link the Treehouse Schoolhouse in the show notes. And I know families are going to be excited to discover some of your encouraging resources as well.